We're looking at starting pitchers. This is part one of a two-part preview, and on Friday, a mailbag. Getting a lot of good questions about the Coors Field outfield walls being raised and some closer questions with a lot of news for that position, and we'll get to that on Friday. But for now, all four of us are here to talk starting pitchers. Adam, Scott, Al, Heath. Your email is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Won't get to any today, but remember, mailbag Friday. I think we got all that out of the way. Good morning, everybody. Who wants to talk first?
Not me.
Heath, Heath, we're going to get along today, okay?
I have every intention of getting along, as long as you don't say anything that I don't agree with.
Okay, that's fair. I'll do my best. I read your blog on a, I don't know if we call it a blog, a story, whatever, on Aroldis Chapman. I thought it was very good. Great job, Heath. You're the man.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
And what you talked about was, well, he's got a 30-game suspension, so what does that do for his value? That's the only news item we're really going to talk about today. We'll give you a little bit of Chapman, and then it's all starting pitchers. On Friday, we'll talk about Carter Capps. Hopefully, we should know more about his sore elbow. Albert Pujols on track for opening day. The Rockies raising their outfield walls. Just real quick, big deal?
No. Yeah, I think the... the issue in Colorado is how far the ball carries, not how high it carries.
Well, how high are they raising the wall?
A lot.
I mean, it's kind of hard to know. Oh. It's hard to know, even if we had all this precise information about how things play until they actually, play some games there.
But they are raising them quite a bit. 8 feet, 9 inches between right center and right field. They're raising them that much.
Wait, they're going to make them that tall, or
raising them that much to 16 feet?
They're doubling
feet.
The right field fence in height.
Here are the details. They're raising the wall between right center and right field up to 16 feet 6 inches. It's almost 9 feet higher. And down the left field line, they're raising it 5 feet to 13 feet. So, big additions. We'll talk about it on Friday. Seattle signed a Cuban outfielder, Guillermo Heredia, and Hunter Pence has Achilles inflammation. We should know more. Games are starting, so Friday will be an informative day. But let's just talk Aroldis Chapman and Heath, you wrote the story, so 30-game suspension. However, if any of those games get rained out, you got to figure some of them will in April. I'm guessing, let's say it'll be more like a 28-game suspension because his date of return will not be pushed back if any games are rained out or postponed for any reason.
Really?
Yeah, kind of weird.
That gives the Yankees some motivation because I think before the game starts, the teams actually have control over whether it's a rainout or not, and then once it starts, the umpires have control. So I wonder if the Yankees will just be more likely to say, it's going to rain today.
It's possible. But it's something to consider. But anyway, with a 30-game suspension,
yes.
What are you guys doing with Chapman in your rankings? What's the impact? Heath, you can kick it off.
I just lowered him. I think the consensus, we talked about this before I wrote the piece, that it was going to be right in the 8, 10, 12 range in terms of rankings. We have kind of a precedent for this with Kenley Jansen last year because Jansen missed about the first month and a half of the season. In roto leagues, he was still able to finish 9th amongst relievers because, and this is the tricky part, I think, we talk about how saves aren't necessarily that predictable, but the reason he was able to finish 9th was because he still had 36 saves, which was basically the same number Chapman had in a full season last year.
Pitching for a different team. Yeah.
That's so true. Yeah.
I don't think it's predictive at all.
Right. Except that he also had no competition at all with that team.
Yeah, but, I don't think the Yankees are going to be indecisive when Chapman gets back. I mean, they're either going to give him the job, which I think is the most likely scenario by far, or they're going to say, you know what, Andrew Miller's done such a good job in your absence, we'll just stick with him.
I said yesterday when we talked about it, I give that scenario about a 5% chance, and I wonder if maybe that's even too high, because it's not like the Yankees, like a year ago, where they don't know what they're getting with Andrew Miller in the closer's role. They know exactly what they're getting, and they still went out and got Chapman. Yeah. So I just can't even imagine the scenario where Miller keeps a job.
Okay.
Well, Heath, let me bring up another case study here, and it's actually Andrew Miller himself who missed about a month from his last appearance was June 9th. He got hurt, and then he pitched again on July 8th. So it was about a month he missed with an injury. So a pretty similar situation, and Miller on the Yankees last year finished as the number 6 closer in points leagues and the number 3 closer in rotisserie leagues. So is that a better gauge? Because obviously
now, did that month include the All-Star break?
No, it was just before.
I don't even think it matters so much where they finish, because it's not like you're leaving them in your lineup during the time they're absent. You're replacing them with somebody.
In points leagues, I completely agree. But what I got to thinking about as I was writing it yesterday was, in roto leagues, it's not like there's a ton of extra closers to just fill in as replacement value.
Miller himself. It's not like he's going to be
as long
costly.
As you're going to handcuff him, yeah.
But he's going to be drafted now. Miller is going to be drafted now, you know,
right.
Not necessarily by the Chapman.
In roto leagues anyway.
And even in roto leagues, if you can't find another closer, you're getting starting pitcher production that you wouldn't have gotten, you know, if Chapman was in your lineup. So it's still, you still get a positive. It's still like you're not just taking a zero with Chapman in there.
No.
So where he finishes in the end, I don't think is a proper gauge of his value.
I agree with that. But also what he does from the time he gets back is not a perfect gauge either. It's somewhere in between those two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think in the first couple of weeks, there could be some unexpected closers. You know, there's an injury or somebody just absolutely, you know, Fernando Rodney unexpectedly flails out of the gate.
That would be unexpected.
Yeah. Something like that.
Well, all right, I'm looking at your rankings. So maybe, Scott, now have you just not changed them? Because you have Chapman fourth and Heath dropped him to 11th.
I think that's a product of Heath getting into the office earlier today.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will move him between 8th and 10th. I haven't decided exactly where yet, but in a similar range to where Heath has him.
I'm moving him to 9th, and that's also going to give me an excuse to move David Robertson up and Mark Melanson actually behind Chapman.
Okay. Well, guess what? We have another relief pitcher podcast that we can break it down, but big in the news, so thought everybody would want to know where we're standing on that. Starting pitchers! Okay, hey, first base and outfield maybe aren't as deep or as quality depth as we're used to. What about starting pitcher? Is this still a really deep position that you can get awesome players late in your draft at?
I mean, it's super deep at the top, which we've talked a lot about for the last couple of months, but there's this no man's land after 30 or so pitchers have come off the board. And actually, we had an NL only mock yesterday, and I was looking at the NL pitchers in that cohort, the Joe Ross's and Raisel Iglesias's, and not having any clue what to do. So I do think late in the draft, I found so far it's kind of too late to yep. really get any pitchers that you're.
See,
big after.
I like, it's a huge drop off.
Yeah,
but there is a ton of upside still after pick 30. I mean, there's some guys that we wouldn't be surprised are top 15, top 20 pitchers.
Well, I'm not sure what Adam may be meant by late in the draft. I was thinking last few rounds.
Oh, okay.
Because I think those pitchers are going in the, you know, the Iglesias zone.
Well, yeah. Who are the pitchers you're talking about? Because I would be, given how many ace caliber pitchers there are, I would be surprised if a non-ace caliber pitcher did crack the top 15.
No, I wouldn't.
If for no other reason than because guys like Severino and McCullers and Rodon, the ones we perceive as having that type of upside eventually, just aren't going to get the innings to compete with the Dallas Keuchels and Chris Archers of the world. And, you know, those are guys who are outside all of our top 12s, I think. So that just shows you the depth at starting pitcher. And, you know, I think going back to like December, November, early this off season, I was kind of sensing what Al was talking about, where there are so many high end pitchers, like the distinction between the high ends and the low ends or the middle ends has become so distinct that it's going to be very hard to compete with just middle, late round table scrap types who you're hoping have a breakthrough. And maybe a couple of them do, but the fact is those guys who drafted the Jake Arrietas and Jose Fernandez as early are still getting those Carlos Rodons and Lance McCullers as their third, fourth options.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody's saying you don't want to get one of the top 15 pitchers. I don't know that you have to get three of them.
Well,
how about two?
Two, I think, is
reasonable.
Two would be nice.
But in the past, you know, I might have campaigned to say you really don't need any of them because you can make do with these high upside types, and enough of them will break out to keep up at the position. I don't think that's true anymore, in part because there are so many more aces that it's a higher threshold you have to meet.
Okay, very interesting. Last year, Chris Archer, I think, was probably the best example. I mean, John Lackey finished as like a top 12 pitcher, at least in points leagues. But Archer had a real breakout. Is there an Archer this year? Who's your Chris Archer this year?
How late do they have to be drafted?
Well, what do you think? He was probably like a 10th to 12th round pick last year.
Because I see a guy in the 9th in Carlos Martinez.
Oh, that's my boy. You know that.
Yeah. See, we're getting along already.
Is it going in the 9th round?
Looks to me like his average draft position's like 104th.
Wow.
That's probably the closest approximation to what Archer was last year I can think of, where it just wouldn't shock me for him to be Martinez to be a top 10 pitcher. I really can't think of anybody else.
I'll throw a name out there based on the way he finished with his strikeout rate.
If you say Rich Hill.
Escalating. No, I'm going to say Yordano Ventura, actually.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah. Actually, as I remember it, Ventura and Archer were getting drafted pretty much side by side last year, with, you know, everybody picking one or the other as their popular breakout pick, and then Archer ended up being it, and Ventura was a dud in the beginning, but he had that fake-out trip to the minor leagues in July, and thereafter he averaged nearly 11 strikeouts per 9 innings, started incorporating his curveball more and more effectively, and it made him more of a bat misser, and I think there's a lot of upside to be had there still.
All right, we'll dig deeper into the position maybe today, but most likely tomorrow. Let's talk about the top and Clayton Kershaw and when he should go. I just want to give some numbers here, making a case for Clayton Kershaw. I think the case is much more compelling in points leagues than rotisserie or head-to-head categories leagues. Over the last 3 seasons, Clayton Kershaw, he's only been the number one starting pitcher in points leagues once, but that doesn't really tell the whole story because he's been top 3 all 3 years. And in Roto, he's been number one twice, and last year he finished second. But just looking at the gap between Kershaw and the number 12 pitcher, he has scored over 700 points 3 straight seasons. That is, like, mind-blowing. The number 12 starting pitcher in those 3 seasons, 516, 556, and 525 fantasy points. So you could be getting almost 200 more fantasy points than the number 12 starting pitcher. And in Roto, it's less pronounced, okay? So in Roto, you know, the number 12 starting pitcher finished usually around 50th in overall player rating. So, you know, where would you guys take Kershaw in a points league, and where would you take Clayton Kershaw in a Roto league?
I don't really, I don't make the distinction. So I've got him 10th for both. And, yeah, I don't know, like, why do you think it makes more sense in a points league?
First of all, you need more hitters in a Roto league, so I tend to go hitters early. And I don't know, it seemed like the numbers seemed to bear out that there was a bigger gap, that he scored more points than like the number 12 pitcher. You know, the gap was bigger in points league than it was in Roto. I don't know the best way to say it.
Okay, well, that's a really good reason. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's harder to quantify exactly how valuable a player is in Roto because it's always relative value.
Yeah.
But I think where I agree with Al is that if you break down what he contributes in certain categories, I mean, he is easily the safest bet for ERA of any starting pitcher, and easily the safest bet for strikeouts of any starting pitcher. That's two categories where he's going to dominate, and then obviously going to be good in the others too. And I actually, you know, I say like Al, I have them the same in both, but for me it's fourth because there's such a track record of dominance in that really doesn't compare to anyone other than the Mike Trout, one of the 3 players who's going to go ahead of him. And so even though it's a position that there's not as much urgency to fill it, more than anything, in the first round pick, I want a guy who's going to perform like a first rounder. And I think Clayton Kershaw is the fourth safest bet to do that.
Now, I've got to disclose something here. Now, there's 2 reasons why I don't have Kershaw higher. And one is that I think I've got a little more faith in guys like Sale or Kluber to bridge the gap maybe than Scott does. But the second reason is pretty irrational, which is that I have a history of when I have gone very early after aces, that it's been the year that they kind of fall off the table, like Lincecum, Verlander. Back in the day, I did that with Greg Maddux when he was in the peak of his career, and I thought this could go on forever. And then that year when he fell off a bit, yeah, that was the year I took him, I think, with the first overall pick, actually.
But it's been so consistent from Kershaw, and he's still young, and there's been no signs of let up. Like, you putting him 10th tells me you have Miguel Cabrera ahead of him. And you know, we both argued Miguel Cabrera is a first rounder, but you can't say he's safer than Kershaw.
I have him 10th, and I don't have Miguel Cabrera ahead of him.
Good for you, Heath.
Well, nah, I mean, look, it's I don't know that those other pitchers showed many signs that this was
right,
going to be.
Right, that's the point I want to get
at. And he has thrown a lot of innings, 227 and two-thirds or more in four of his last five regular seasons, and then at least 12 and two-thirds in three straight postseasons. So do you even entertain the possibility that Kershaw could be a bust this year?
I mean, look, not
really.
Not a high percentage. Right. I mean, yeah, I have this distrust of going too early after the top pitcher, but no, there's no particular reason to think that.
Well, Heath, you have him 10th. Why do you have him lower? Because, you know, he's going fourth overall in Fantasy Pros ADP.
Mostly just because I'm not probably going to take a pitcher in the first round.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel.
It's that simple. I think Clayton Kershaw is the best pitcher. I think Scott's right about everything he said about he's most likely he's the safest to win certain categories. But I am just most likely not going to take a pitcher in the first round.
I've never done it. And Scott, you don't either. So would you really pull the trigger of Clayton Kershaw fourth?
I think I would. I haven't had an opportunity to test it yet. But I think, I mean, obviously I wouldn't recommend it if I didn't think I'd do it myself. And I think the difference is exactly what I was saying, just the way the player pool has been redistributed. There aren't many good, safe hitters anymore. And I think that even applies to the first round. I mean, how safe is Stanton? How safe is McCutchen? How safe is Cabrera?
But at the same
not as safe as Kershaw.
Your argument for getting two or three of those aces is how there's so many aces.
Yeah.
So you can very easily get aces in the second, third, probably even fourth round.
You can. So, and that's, yeah, I mean, Clayton Kershaw fourth isn't the position scarcity pick, but neither is Bryce Harper over Paul Goldschmidt, you know?
Right.
It only matters to a point. And getting Kershaw in the first round, what it allows you to do, I'd still like to get two aces, but I can live without it easier than if I, you know, if my number one pitcher was Jose Fernandez or Steven Strasburg or Zach Greinke, you know?
Right. I guess the way I look at it is and I know you're not a huge fan of Chris Davis as the last of that elite tier in your rankings.
Yeah.
I think you'd probably rather have Miggy or Rizzo or whoever you have and Scherzer or Arrieta than Kershaw and Davis.
Maybe. That's probably true. But, yeah, I mean, it would help if you picked a better example than Davis because there's other alternatives late in the second round to pair with Kershaw that I would like that combination more.
Like
Posey, well, or in a roto league, D. Gordon.
Okay, so you'd rather have Gordon and Kershaw than I'd say Rizzo, but you'd say Miggy, I guess, is your second.
I can't remember. I think Miggy. Yeah.
Okay. I have a hard time making the argument when it's Miggy, so I guess
Miggy and Scherzer versus Kershaw and Gordon. Yeah, in a roto league, I would prefer Kershaw and Gordon. Legitimately.
Well, I would too, but that's just because I don't want Miggy.
Well, let me.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't say I don't want Miggy. I don't want to spend my fourth round pick on him.
Your fourth round pick, your first round pick,
my number four pick.
Number four pick. Okay, so this brings up a bigger issue because you talked about, you know, the pitchers that he might be able to get in round two if he took Kershaw in round one or if he took someone else in round one. But all right, now every year we go through this, and in points leagues especially. If you look at average draft position on our site, whenever it becomes available, so many pitchers are going to go early in points leagues, and I don't know what it will be in Roto, but you know, we typically, year after year, as I've been hosting this podcast, I don't know, this is like year five or six or whatever, it's always, don't take starting pitchers as early as they go in ADP, like wait on starting pitcher a little bit. Have things changed this year? I honestly don't really think they have as I've done the drafts. I've been waiting until round three or four to take my first starting pitcher. Maybe I grab my second one a little bit earlier, but you know, what are you guys thinking? I always want my first two picks. Let's forget the Kershaw argument, because if he falls to you, that changes things. But I always want my first two picks to be hitters. How are you guys feeling on draft day?
I'm pretty much the same.
Yeah, me too. It's, you know, not necessarily 100%, but pretty close.
Yeah, I feel like I've been the one loudest about the change. But you have to remember how far on the other side I was. You have to take that into context. It's a big change for me, but I feel like I've kind of caught up to everyone else's typical approach at starting pitcher.
You've not had very many mocks so far this year where you've gone hitter to start.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I think he has.
Most mocks I go hitter to start. I usually don't take my first until the third. Now, I may have I've had a couple where I've had three by the end of round five. I've took them consecutively, three, four, and five, which isn't my preference, but I think that's more viable this year than in years past. So that's the difference I keep trumpeting. Though, if you look at our head-to-head mock, our head-to-head average draft results just on our site, not mock drafts we've done, but just the masses doing their own drafts, starting pitcher is still ridiculously front-loaded. So,
how much of that is because of people doing mock drafts?
Yeah,
and it's a lot of those are computer picks.
Yeah, that's a problem. Auto drafts, they do to starting pitchers what they do to quarterbacks in football. They score the most points, so they, you know, have the highest projection, and then the auto draft might just take the player projected to have the most fantasy points.
I think in some leagues people do actually draft that way.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. It's a combination. Now, I think maybe the best way to look at it is ask you guys, how many aces are there? And I know that this year you want to have two of them. So you want to have two of your top blank starting pitchers.
Top, you know? 20 for me.
That's a good, like, that's not the same answer for me, I guess, as the aces question.
Okay.
But yes, I do want to have two of my top 20 pitchers.
And
how many of those 20 are aces?
See, I feel like there's a tier after price.
Oh, so you're putting, what, five in?
Or seven.
Seven in? Okay.
Now, I'm not saying we get caught up in this word ace. And, I mean, there's going to be 12 number ones because there's 12 teams in the league. But I think there's a tier after price. And then I think there's another tier around 17 or 18 or 19.
I do agree with you, and I'm looking to see where the difference is, because I would say after Sale, who's my number eight, but that's because I have Strasburg ahead of Sale and you don't.
Right.
So, yeah, I think there's a bit of a drop-off.
I would like to have two of my top 22. I mark the tier delineation at 17, which is after Felix Hernandez and Carlos Carrasco. And I, you know, I just consider, could either of them be as good as Madison Bumgarner? Like, would I be the least bit surprised if either of them were? And my answer is no. I mean, Felix Hernandez has been until last year, and Carlos Carrasco, I think, with his underlying stats, is definitely part of that discussion for me. So I'm willing to lump more in that group and not make it a clear distinction.
I don't know if maybe my tier thing that has less to do with their upside and more to do with their floor. I feel like Bumgarner's got a considerably safer floor than Hernandez or Carrasco.
I don't feel like either of them has an especially low floor, though. We're talking right. about
no, not
high
especially.
Floor pitchers across the board.
I agree.
So,
but not lower than Bumgarner?
To a degree, but I mean, if you nitpick that much, then I find that tiering doesn't end up helping you at all, because I prefer to have larger tiers so that it allows me to wait even longer. If it's a small distinction, I'd rather just put them in the same tier, because it's probably not going to make a difference in how my team performs in the end.
All right, so is it fair to say you guys want two of your top somewhere between 18 and 20, and, you know, depending on your personal preference, maybe you put a little bit more stock into the more established guys, the Bumgarners, Prices of the world, but if not, then you're fine. Just wait another round and grab Harvey or DeGrom or something like that, and then another round later, grab Garrett Cole, and then you're good. So is that fair to say you want two of your top 20, but you know, maybe for some of you it's different. You would put a little bit more urgency in getting a top seven guy.
I think that absolutely nails my approach. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Cool. And then, you know, you at home when you're drafting, you figure out your tiers and who you have where, and that will determine if you want to reach for somebody in round two or three. And honestly, I think I'm starting my team with three hitters because you do get into this big group after Price or Bumgarner, whoever it is, Sale, where I don't really care if I get Jacob DeGrom or Dallas Keuchel the following round. Although I really like DeGrom. I kind of feel like DeGrom or Harvey, I really feel like, other than Kershaw, I could see them being Cy Young. I mean, the Arrieta as well, but I really like those guys. And then, actually, I think it's more about who you want to avoid in that group. And there's one guy that I really want to avoid, and that is Noah Syndergaard. I am worried about the innings with Noah Syndergaard. Huge jump from last year. It concerns me a bit. And obviously, he's the least proven, probably, of the entire group. And I can't see myself drafting Zach Greinke either. Maybe because I've just been friends with Heath for too long.
We are on the same page.
Are you on the same page about Syndergaard or just Greinke?
Well, I don't. I mean, I've got him. I've got Syndergaard 19th. Where does that compare to you guys?
15th for me.
20th for me.
So I guess I'm right in the middle on him.
That would explain why I'm winding up with Syndergaard a lot.
Yes.
All right. Give me one top 20 pitcher that you are least likely to draft. I hope that doesn't just mean it's your 20th guy, but someone that you have actually some concerns about that on draft day you might just get a little queasy. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, well, my 20th guy is Cole Hamels, and for me there's so little to distinguish him from Zach Greinke at number 9 and everybody in between that, I'm not just going to revert to Hamels. It's the least likely. That is really tough.
Well, it sounds like Greinke, based on what you just said.
Yeah, I suppose just because of ADP, he's going to go higher than I'm willing to take him. Yeah, you're right, Greinke.
Scott, how about you?
It's Jose Fernandez, who probably is the second most talented pitcher in baseball. But if my whole rationale for investing in starting pitchers earlier is, well, they're actually the safe choices now, don't think that applies to Fernandez. He hasn't had a full ace workload yet, and he may not in his first full season back from Tommy John surgery. So, and then there's the whole thing about, okay, he had that biceps issue down the stretch, and it seemed to impact his effectiveness. So it's just, there's enough red flags there for me to just hold out a little longer when holding out a little longer means Chris Archer or Felix Hernandez.
And Heath?
Well, mine would be Greinke is the most obvious, but I guess I'll go a little bit less obvious and say Clayton Kershaw because I'm not going to take a pitcher in the first round. So I'm much less likely to draft Kershaw than anyone else.
Can I just jump around here? I know I'm going a little off topic, but I'm just thinking about how much I love Jacob DeGrom. What's that?
Be careful.
Okay, Scott.
You know what's awesome is we have these thumbnails on our rankings page, and he is just so easy to find because the hair is just all over the place.
Yes.
Is thumbnail a term that people know what it means?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah. Little headshots.
Yeah, little headshots.
Yeah.
Not actual thumbnails.
No.
It would be kind of interesting if for each picture we had a little picture of their thumbnails.
No.
Some would probably be very gross.
I think it'd be hard to distinguish the pictures.
It would be. That's what would make it interesting. Could you recognize them from their thumbnail?
No, but by using headshots, it's so easy to find DeGrom.
I like the term thumbnail much better than headshot.
Anyway, I can't sit here and say you're too low on DeGrom. You guys have him 8th, 10th, and 8th, Scott, Al, and Heath. So I get not ranking him ahead of like Chris Sale, but I would take him ahead of Chris Sale. I don't know. I just really, really like DeGrom this year. He had a sub-1 whip. He strikes out so many guys. Like, he's so awesome. I love Jacob DeGrom. Is anybody thinking this could be like he's this year's Arrieta?
So
I think in mid-August I was saying he was going to be my fourth pitcher next year. So
I remember that.
We're talking about a very thin line. I don't have a problem with you saying you're going to take him over those guys.
All right.
You don't have to bid up now in our next auction, though.
You don't really have to, though, either. Like, you can just wait until those guys are taken and then take DeGrom.
Well, they're probably all going to be taken in the same round, so you may have to. It's the third round pitching run. I think DeGrom's generally a part of that.
Yeah, he's third round. Sale and Bumgarner and Arrieta are all second round right now.
And I'm not really as worried about his innings. He's gone up from 147 and two-thirds to 178 and two-thirds to 216. So I think it's, you know, been a pretty logical jump, and that includes majors and minors in some seasons. That includes a postseason. It's overall innings. All right, more general questions. Are there starting pitchers who are better in points or roto, more format-specific starting pitchers that we need to know about?
Sonny Gray is the first guy that comes to mind as a points specialist. I really don't have any interest in him in roto for what I've seen him go for. But in a points league, his efficiency and durability, those innings add up. And innings, as we've talked about, other times in points leagues, could be underrated, and strikeouts could be a little overrated.
I would say, just as a general rule, any high-end pitcher who doesn't get a lot of strikeouts is going to be more valuable in points leagues. So that would also include Adam Wainwright. I think to a certain extent it includes Felix Hernandez.
Zach Greinke. Yep.
Yeah, Zach Greinke, sure. Yeah. And conversely, I think the high strikeout types, who you can count on for an especially low ERA, like, honestly, Kershaw, I get the argument that starting pitchers as a whole are more valuable in head-to-head points than Roto, but I think among starting pitchers, the gap between Kershaw and everyone else is even greater in Roto because of what he does in those percentage stats.
Could be.
This is a question, since Adam loves Carlos Martinez too, we can talk about him, because he's a guy that I've struggled with. I like him a lot, but I can't decide which format I like him better in.
Well, yeah,
he's probably going to be a lower innings guy. Mm-hmm. Which would make me think that I like him better in Roto. But he's also been he could kill you in whip.
Yeah. Yeah. He does walk a lot.
So I don't know, which format really I want to rank him higher in.
I was thinking the same thing with Francisco Liriano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And
I suspect Liriano's going to be more valuable in Roto, because the innings really are so important in points leagues. And Liriano's not going to get those for you.
And my next question was, which starting pitcher hurts your whip? And Carlos Martinez was going to be the first one. I said John Lester before the last 2 years was kind of a high whip guy, but maybe he's a different pitcher now.
Was Archer a high whip guy last year for what he did everywhere else?
I actually don't. Sorry.
That's not a good podcast.
We're recording this.
Well, if you really like to know. Yeah, Archer, I can look up Archer's whip.
That doesn't really strike me as high.
Nope.
So whip is another category. Like, whip, I think, is kind of like, if you're looking at starting pitchers, it might be the easiest category to overlook on draft day. You just, like, maybe you're like me and you just, ERA, strikeouts, whatever. And whip can kind of sneak up on me sometimes. So I was actually saddened to see Carlos Martinez having such a bad whip, like 1.24 or something like that last year. But I don't think he's a finished product.
The year before it was like 1.4.
Well, he was pitching.
You know who's going to hurt you in whip?
Who?
Bad pitchers.
Yeah. Yeah. Carlos Martinez, 1.29 whip last year. That is really bad. So it does make me reconsider things a little bit. Even if I think he's going to improve on that, I mean, how much better is he going to get? Sleepers, breakouts, and busts, guys, and there are three of us today, or, you know, four of us, three of you, so maybe be a little bit briefer than usual, but how about everybody give me one or two sleepers? Scott, we'll start with you.
Okay. I don't know how ready I... Okay, so sleepers, to distinguish them from breakouts, I'm going to pick even lower-end guys, and one of them I'll pick is Rich Hill, who he didn't want me to mention earlier. But I think among true late round picks, so beyond the Joe Ross class of pitchers, he's the one guy who can come closest to meeting ace level strikeout rate with his wicked curveball.
Is that grown now? Sorry.
Come on, Heath. He's the 97th pitcher off the board. Like, that is. What he did last year has got to give you a little bit of hope for that.
I mean, I just don't think he's I don't know how many leagues he's going to be drafted in.
Well, that's what makes him a sleeper.
Right.
Right.
He just might be a waiver.
You think I went too low end?
He might be a waiver wire sleeper.
On Rich Hill there. I would mention Vincent Velasquez, but I think we're going to talk about him a lot in relief pitcher. So I'll go a little higher than Rich Hill and say Raisel Iglesias.
Yes, I think that's a great one.
Okay. Now, Raisel Iglesias had a very strong finish, too. High strikeout rate with a low walk rate. And actually not a bad home run rate, considering where he pitches his home games. So kind of had the FIP trifecta going on there. So I like that for his value going forward. But I like lumping these two guys together, Raisel Iglesias and Rich Hill, because, interestingly enough, of the seven pitchers who had back-to-back double-digit strikeout games at any point last season,
yes,
those are the only two that aren't among that ace class we're talking about. Now,
this is something interesting. The reason I got so excited that you said Raisel Iglesias wasn't because I was really excited about you saying Raisel Iglesias. It was because I found on Fantasy Pros today, and I would have never guessed this because I thought we were kind of excited about Raisel Iglesias. We are by far the lowest in the industry on Iglesias.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I like Iglesias for this year, but I'm not counting him as a sleeper just based on what I've seen in drafts and mocks so far. Yeah, he's going earlier than I would take him.
The consensus is that he's like a number three.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going 37.
You don't even have him as a number four.
I think fantasy owners, if you're drafting on CBS, I have a feeling you have a better chance of getting good value on Raisel Iglesias. I actually don't know what we have his sports line projections are, but that will determine where he is in the draft room. But if we are the lowest, then if you're drafting on other websites, just be prepared that other people might be really into Raisel Iglesias. And, after the All-Star break, opponents hit 193 against Iglesias. So I guess I'll ask you, when would you be comfortable taking him? Because right now he is going in the 11th, 12th round, but he's the 37th pitcher off the board.
I wouldn't be uncomfortable taking him there. It just depends on how starting pitching has been drafted up to that point, how many I have, etc. I also have found that it's hard for me to get him in drafts as much as I like him.
Mm-hmm.
But that kind of, I think, furthers the point we were making at the top of the show that there may not be a true sleeper at this position because there are so many fewer enticing middle round types that can actually measure up to the early round types potentially that everyone's kind of on top of them, you know?
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to fill out the final 2/3 of your staff with three of these guys. You're probably going to get one, maybe two, if you make it a priority at that point. Again, it emphasizes taking starting pitching early.
I want to see if I can make you scoff about Iglesias. He is going 30 picks ahead of Severino, 40 picks ahead of Yordano Ventura, 50 picks ahead of Taijuan Walker, 50 picks ahead of Carlos Rodon.
That's dumb.
Yeah.
most of those guys I like better than him, and I think for good reason. So, yeah, if
They're all
among the group I was talking about, the middle round types who could maybe compete with the high end types.
Yeah.
So I would just prefer the one who lasts the longest of them.
Okay, Heath, you're up, sleeper.
Since I got to scoff at one thing, I'm probably going to scoff at my sleeper too. I'm going to go with Andrew Keschner. He was terribly unlucky last year. And I feel like we take a look at what he did in 2013 and 2014. He was a little bit fortunate. He was maybe lucky. But he's a guy that had pushed a 3.1 ERA, a 2.5 ERA. And then all of a sudden he's just terrible last year. I just don't buy it. He was just a really unlucky pitcher. He only won 6 games. That killed him in points leagues. He's going to win more games this year. He's going to have a better ERA this year. I just think there's people are just completely forgetting about Andrew Keschner, and there's a pretty decent chance that he's a nice 3 or 4 starter.
Anyone agree, disagree, Andrew Keschner?
I just don't know who he is. Mm-hmm. Not to say that, the upside for him looks good, and there's no reason to say he can't reach that, but I just think there's too much variability with him.
And no track record of durability. Like, which, you know, I understand you could argue the same thing for Rich Hill, but
much more so.
No, I don't think much more so, because Hill hasn't had the opportunities Cashner's had. They keep trying to give Cashner a chance to be a top of the rotation guy, and he keeps letting him down. So,
he had 31 starts last year.
Well, let me say this about Cashner's durability. Innings pitched for Cashner last three seasons, 175, 123 and a third, 184 and two thirds. At this point, you know, he's going so late, he's almost the 80th pitcher off the board. You probably take 175 innings out of him. If they're good.
No, yeah. I think it's fine to like him as a sleeper. I just don't myself.
Okay. Al, sleeper?
Kyle Hendricks. Joe Maddon has done me a big favor by saying there's a competition for the fifth starter spot. I don't know if that's why Hendricks is going later than I was expecting him to, but he had a quietly and sort of deceptively good season, or I should say it was looked deceptively meh, but he became a pretty good strikeout pitcher, still had the good control, still got the ground balls, but the ERA was 3.95, and I think the strand rate should move back towards the norm this year and get that ERA down probably in the low threes, have a lot of opportunities for wins, and I just don't see him losing the fifth spot to Adam Warren or Clayton Richard.
Would you take Hendricks over Rich Hill?
Probably not, because I just, given how late you can get Hendricks, at that point in the draft, Hill represents such a higher level of upside that I'm probably going that route.
All right, so Hendricks more of a deep sleeper, deeper anyway. All right, we've given you Rich Hill, Raisel Iglesias, Andrew Cashner, Kyle Hendricks, the sleeper candidates. Let's do breakouts, and we'll counterclockwise it now. Al, we'll start with you, although I don't really know which. Actually, we're going clockwise based on how you guys are sitting in the room, aren't we? We go Al, Heath, okay. Scott. Yeah.
No, all counterclockwise.
Right. Oh, is it?
Yep.
Okay. Well,
this is too much for
me. You don't see what position Heath and I are sitting in. You're back to us.
Wow. So Heath is across from Al, and you're to Al's left?
Actually, we went with the triangle formation.
My mind is blown.
We're running the triangle offense. I'm at 10:30. And Scott said around 1:30.
Okay, I'll have to think about that. Al, who's a breakout?
All right, well, I've talked a lot about Rick Porcello. He's my favorite. And again, it's just based on that eight-start stretch at the end when you got the sinker sinking and got strikeouts to boot. But Scott, since I've talked about him so much, I want to spend a little bit more time talking about Anthony Desclafani, who probably isn't a sleeper because he's going – as high or maybe a little higher than I thought he would in drafts, but I like his chances to break out this year. He also finished strong. And the thing I liked about Desclafani going into last year is I thought he was somebody who could help a lot with whip. And over his last 11 starts, he walked just 9 batters. And the strikeouts weren't bad at all, actually, just a little more than 1 per inning. So I think as long as he keeps the home runs under control, then that's you know, he could take a big step.
All right, Al. So you often think, I think, deeper than Scott and Heath. So because like I was expecting someone in the, you know, Pineda, McCullers, Taiwan Walker group. I thought maybe we were going to go there for breakout. So these are
I have Taiwan Walker as a breakout too. I could have talked about him. I kind of figure maybe Heath or Scott.
That's totally fine.
Walk around their list too.
You're a champion of the deep leagues, though, Al. That's all I was going to say.
Okay.
Champion of the deep
leagues. I'll wear the crown.
All right, Heath. Who's a breakout for you?
Well, I probably should stick with Yordano Ventura, right, and steal him from Scott, since that's who Scott was probably going to talk about.
I already talked about him.
Okay.
Yeah, I like him as a breakout too.
And I think one of the things that Scott said about Ventura in the first half last year, and how bad he was in the first half was way overblown. And if you just look at his FIP over the last 3 years, last 2 years, in 2014, he had a 3.6 FIP and a 3.2 ERA, and then he was everybody's favorite breakout. Last year, he had a 3.57 FIP and a 4.08 ERA, and now he's the 50th pitcher off the board. I think that's a case of people looking way too much into ERA. Of course, he did have a good finish. The thing that I like the most that he did is he was striking out 8.6 batters per nine, much better than the 7.8 he did in 2014. And he needed to strike out more batters. Hopefully that will help him pitch just a little bit better with runners in scoring position, which is something that he has struggled with. And it'd be nice to see him approach 200 innings.
Well, you know, he did get demoted for like a day, remember?
Did right. He? But even then, like when he was demoted, things, he had emotional issues, clearly. I don't think anybody would question that. And I don't think the club was particularly happy with some of the circumstances he put his teammates into. But I also wouldn't put it past the Royals to see he's got a 4.8 ERA and not really think about the fact that his BABIP is just out of control or his strand rate's ridiculous.
Okay.
Like, I mean, this is a team that's batting Alcides Escobar leadoff this year because they win when he hits leadoff.
Okay. You're down to Ventura.
But it is. You know, he's going to be a much better pitcher if he can continue the strikeout rate
right
after that, regardless of what kind of luck he may or may not have had before.
Yeah, I mean, if he can just
before the fake out demotion,
if he can just have his strikeout rate from last year and approach 200 innings, he's going to be a steal at 50th.
Scott, breakout for you.
Okay. Do you want to hear more about Taijuan Walker or Joe Ross?
Well, I actually think Taijuan Walker is very interesting because I feel like the – I mean, we've had this argument before, but I feel like he has to throw fewer strikes. You know, like maybe walk a few more batters because he gave up too many home runs. And I know the whip was great, but I don't – he had one good stretch all year. Now, I actually agree because I think Walker is going to be really good, but I just want to frame it appropriately. He had one good stretch all season with seven starts with a 1.68 ERA, and then after that, the only thing he did well was not walk batters.
I mean, last 20 starts, 0.98 whip.
That's the only thing you can point to is the whip.
That says a lot, and yeah, he did allow more home runs than I'd like to see, but his home run rate of 1.3 per nine wasn't so far off from Noah Syndergaard's 1.1 per nine. And I think they're very similar pitchers. Obviously, Syndergaard's had more success to this point, but Walker, I think, is started the process of catching up to him over those final 20 starts last year when he did get the control under control. Because most of his bad ERA on the year was from those first 2 months where he was all over the place. His walk rate was high. He had like a 7.50 ERA during that stretch. It was a disaster. So you take that out of the equation, and his ERA falls to mid threes, which still isn't, you know, high end, but it's somebody you're going to want to have in your lineup, particularly when he's helping your whip to the extent that Walker has and I think will continue to.
But can I just be a pain in the butt about this, Scott? Because yeah, you mentioned how horrible he was at the start, and then he had seven starts between May 29th and July 1st. This is Taijuan Walker we're talking about. He had a 1.68 ERA, and he had over a strikeout per inning. And then after that, after July 1st, he had a 4.83 ERA and 67 strikeouts in 78 and a third, but only 14 walks. So again, it's like it was really just a seven-start stretch.
We could continue to chop up.
No, we
the
can't.
Numbers,
this is
Adam,
a huge. This is a huge chunk of the season with a 4.83 ERA.
You were talking about. He had a 3.71 ERA, which is basically the same ERA.
It was seven starts with a good ERA. He was a bad ERA pitcher. He was bad at everything but whip, and the strikeouts went down again. The only thing he was good at was whip.
He was above average in strikeouts.
No,
boy,
60
like the bad strikeout pitcher.
During the seven starts. I mean, he dominated in every peripheral category.
And I like him because of that, guys. I know what he's capable of. The guy can really, he's got serious stuff. But I just don't want to put it out there that he had a good season because he had one good stretch of seven starts.
What I'm saying, Adam, though, that it sounds like you didn't hear is maybe that, well, you're arguing that me saying the final 20 starts were good is exaggerating the number. You saying only seven of those starts were really good is exaggerating the number the other way because, yeah, there was a rough patch in the middle of that 20-start stretch, but there was also a good stretch after that, too. 3.71 ERA in his final 10 starts for the whip he had is still justifying the spot he's being drafted in.
Okay.
And if you anticipate any improvement at all, then it's going to be, obviously a value at that point.
Fair. Works for me. I don't know why I'm arguing about it so much because I think we're all like Taijuan
Walker.
I like
it. I think you're doing a nice job.
It's just he just had a really crappy season. I mean, it's just look. I think the whip is going to go up for Walker because I don't think he can afford to throw as many strikes, honestly. Like, you've got to pitch out of the strike zone a little bit more. Guys are going to hit home runs off of you. So I feel like you, if he wants to be more successful.
You're pitching coach now, Adam.
Don't you agree? It's so obvious.
Not necessarily. There is some logic to what you're saying, but I'm not going to pretend to know what all plays into it.
No, I mean, I guess it's a little bit.
What we've seen is very encouraging. I'm not going to hold a low whip against a guy this young stage of his career.
It is just interesting that everybody likes a guy who really struggled last year. I guess it's sort of bold.
I think you're overstating it. He was fine his final 20 starts. He wasn't as good as maybe his whip suggested, but he was still a good pitcher.
But if your argument, I'm going to jump in. If your argument against Walker is that he's really inconsistent, then he was still that in his final 20 starts. I mean, he's got games where he throws 6 1/3 shutout innings, goes 9 innings, gives up 1 run, and then he's got games where he goes 3 innings and gives up 5 runs.
This is why he's a breakout candidate.
Right.
If he wasn't that good last year, but he has the potential to be excellent this year.
I don't like any of the way you guys are terming it. Because he got consistent with the walks.
That's it.
Maybe
that's
not
the only thing.
Earned runs, but he did with the walks. They disappeared. They never returned.
They disappeared in several starts. He also had starts where he had 3 walks in 6 innings.
Three walks in 6 innings from time to time. It doesn't mean, he doesn't throw strikes anymore.
Well, but if the only good thing you're saying he did was get rid of the walks.
That's a big step for a guy with his raw stuff.
Well, I'll tell you the best argument for Walker is looking at ADP, and I don't think this is reflective of how he's been going in our drafts, but those are with the fantasy staff. But looking at his ADP, he's way behind. He's 30 picks behind Lance McCullers and Iwakuma. He's behind Colin McHugh, Drew Smyly, Scott Kazmir, Tehran, Severino, Ventura, Odorizzi, Gio Gonzalez, and then Taijuan Walker, the 53rd pitcher off the board. So if you're getting him after all of those guys, then I think you're going to feel pretty good about the value.
Yeah, that is a script I'd flip. And that actually makes me feel good because it means I can continue to tout him as a sleeper/breakout because...
Do you have Walker or Ventura higher?
Walker.
Just solely based on potential.
So
I think Walker was better than Ventura last year.
Well, he wasn't... I don't think that's even debatable. In what? Just because he had a better whip?
I mean, certainly.
that's it.
There was a longer stretch of last season where I felt like I could trust to having Walker in my lineup. It was very short for Ventura, and it came very late in the year.
Would you think that over their last 20 starts, Ventura or Walker was better?
I would say Walker easily.
I'm going to say Ventura because his good start was late in the year. His good stretch was late in the year.
Right.
But I think they had very similar seasons.
What's that?
Well, right, you were talking about last 20 starts specifically. I mean, that's including Walker's great stretch.
Well, he's a big believer in the strong second half.
I'm not. I'm just curious because I don't know that Walker's last 20 starts really measure up to Ventura's 20 starts.
I don't see how that's possible. Walker's last 20 starts were good.
Who's looking up what?
ERA, a 0.98 whip.
There's been no point in the history of this where you've been talking about a 3.62 ERA being good. When did that become your measurement for good?
It's not bad. It's not like I see a pitcher with a 3.62 ERA and does everything well and say, I can't have him on my team.
It's pretty bad.
He's gonna ruin me.
It's not good enough. And again, in those 20 starts, he was not even at a strikeout per inning. Taijuan Walker.
But he was close.
I'm way off on Yordan Ventura. Maybe his last 20 starts weren't.
I think you guys were playing a different game for me last year. Nobody in their right mind would have dropped Walker from about June 1st on when you could have had Ventura for pennies. I mean, for free, probably.
July. Scott, you can take a bow because Yordan Ventura's last 20 starts, he had a 3.88 ERA. And he did have over a strikeout per inning.
Which is the only measurement of a pitcher. But
there's no way he didn't have a better whip, I'll tell you that much. And he had a worse ERA, a worse whip, but he had more strikeouts. All right. Well, anyway, that was a fun argument. So let's just finish the show. Let's do 3 to 5 more minutes, and we can just do a bust for everybody. Heath, you can start. Who's a bust this year?
I have to choose somebody besides Zach Greinke, I suppose.
Well, it's been a while, I think, since you've given your Zach Greinke argument. I always think at this time of year we have a lot of new listeners. And look, we're recording this on March 2nd.
Great, great. So. Well, the biggest thing about it is last time we talked about the Zach Greinke as a bust, we kind of felt like, yeah, his ADP is probably going to adjust and he won't really be drafted that high. And when I look at it now, he's still the seventh pitcher off the board being taken with a 30th overall pick. I will maintain, I think, if Greinke's peripherals remain the same, then he is more likely to be the 20th best pitcher this year than the 10th.
Okay. Which is still good, but yeah.
Yeah. But if you take him as the 7th, maybe not. And maybe taking a pitcher as the 7th pitcher overall and he ends up as a number 2 starter, that's not a bust. But I think he's the most likely of the pitchers being taken in the first 10 to not finish in the top 10.
Okay, Al, bust for you.
Michael Wacha. Now, he got a lot of mileage in fantasy last year because he got 17 wins. But the peripherals kind of flatlined for him. He's a pretty average strikeout pitcher, just shy of 3 walks per 9, which in today's game where there's a lot of impatient hitters or hitters with poor plate discipline, that's not very impressive. And a thing that really worries me about him is he did give up a fair amount of home runs, and he did it especially against right-handed batters, so it wasn't like a platoon splits thing. He allowed a 404 slugging against right-handers, which isn't awful, but it's not great, especially when you put that together with just a so-so strikeout rate. And he got 5 runs of support per 9 innings last year, and the Cardinals, I don't think, are going to be an offensive juggernaut. They weren't last year, so I'm not sure why I got so much run support last year, but I think the wins are going to be harder to come by, and the ERA and the strikeouts are just going to be okay.
Well, let me just make a case for the ERA for Wacha, because he threw 107 innings in 2014, not including the postseason. I don't know what he did, if he did anything in the postseason. And 181 and a third last year. So major jump. And his ERA was 269 going into September. And then he has 788 ERA in September. So maybe there was some fatigue there, Al. I don't know. But the strikeout rate.
Early on in the season last year, I was thinking that this ERA isn't built to last because the peripherals just weren't very good.
Yeah, that's true. I remember you talking about that with Wacha. Okay, so Michael Wacha. Scott White, Taiwan Walker, your bust?
Yeah, no.
We didn't.
I'm going to pair two players because I think they're bust for the same reason. Johnny Cueto and Michael Pineda. I am anticipating Tommy John surgery for one or both of those pitchers based on what they went through, both in terms of health and performance last year. I think Pineda might actually be the clearer case because he actually spent time on the DL in August, I think it was, with a strained forearm. Tommy John surgery is the elbow, of course, but normally that forearm pain is a precursor to the elbow pain that then leads to Tommy John surgery. It's often followed that pattern. And the fact that even after the DL stint, Pineda was getting throttled tells me that he still wasn't healthy and may not be even now. So we'll see the way his spring training goes, but if he's not lights out, I don't want any part of that. Cueto, his elbow problems actually date back to May, and he never had a DL stint, but he never really...
He did have an MRI that showed no tear.
Yeah, he did. But he never really had closure explaining what was wrong with the elbow or saying, oh, I feel perfectly fine now. None of that ever happened. And eventually, when he moved to the Royals, it really seemed to impact his performance. Obviously, there was some concern when the Giants signed him. They joked that they did an MRI on his hair. To show, they were saying they did their due diligence because they wanted to make sure he wasn't hurt either. But bottom line is an MRI can only show so much. And if the tear is so small that it didn't show up on that, it wouldn't be the first time a player had an MRI that supposedly cleared him. And then he went back a little later and he's going to the operating table.
I am going to give you a lot of credit if he has injuries, because I have, you mean, I've heard you say this over and over this winter, and I keep thinking, okay, I'm missing something, and I go and look for somebody else to be speculating that Cueto has some hidden injury, and I almost feel like the amount of like he was under the microscope so much because of that bad finish, and then the fact that he just had to go through the physical and stuff to get the new free agent deal makes him even a little bit less risky. I mean, nobody's been, I don't feel like, more checked out this offseason, and they gave him $130 million.
Yeah, but my point is there's only so much the technology can show us. I wish I had specific examples, and I don't even think that's something I could research if I wanted to, but just speaking anecdotally, I feel like there have been countless instances where you know, there's been some concern over a guy's elbow. He got it checked out, and they said, no, he's fine. And then 2 weeks later, he's suddenly not fine. Now, obviously, it's been a lot longer than 2 weeks, but it's just going to be something I'm watching closely this spring, because if for no other reason the performance issue, if Cueto still doesn't look like his old self, that's going to even alarm me further.
Well, this was a very good start to our starting pitcher preview. Tomorrow we'll go through ADP, but we laid out some strategies, some sleepers, some breakouts, some busts. I'm going to throw in the name Patrick Corbin as a breakout candidate and get your thoughts on it tomorrow. I have a little man crush on Patrick Corbin, and I will leave you with this. You know who dominated in spring training last year? 4-0 with a .67 ERA?
Taiwan Walker.
You know it was Taiwan Walker. All right. We're all on the same page with Taiwan Walker, yet we're arguing, we're arguing our heads off about it. Makes a ton of sense. thanks for part one, guys. We'll talk to you tomorrow for part two.
Goodbye.
Bye.